Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We are thrilled to once again have joining us. Does that make sense? Is this somewhat grammatically correct, David?
To be joined by.
We're joined by music director, maestro of the Albany Symphony Orchestra, David Alan Miller. And the reason he is here, and we have another guest as well, who I will introduce in just a moment. They are with the Albany Symphony Orchestra, and they are set to deck the halls of the Palace Theater on back-to-back weekends with these wonderful seasonal sounds. They are holiday concerts that the orchestra is known for, that they are so people are so excited about. They took a break last year in live and in person.
We did them all. Every one of them.
But you were, you know, now people can actually see them.
True.
Or they can still stay home. We'll get into that in a second. So this Sunday, December 5th at 3 p.m., David and the Symphony will be joined by a sleigh full of talented local friends for the return of the Capital Region's beloved holiday spectacular, The Magic of Christmas. Then 1 week later at 7:30 p.m. at the Palace and streaming live online, the festivities continue with The Nutcracker, with the orchestra at center stage. The concert also includes Strauss's dynamic Don Juan and two gems from late Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Christopher Rouse, his bassoon concerto, and Heimdall's trumpet, featuring Albany Symphony principal trumpet Eric Berlin. Eric, good morning. A great pleasure to have you with us.
Good morning. Great to be with you again.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have you here. David, how are you?
I'm great, Joe. Anytime I get to hear the dulcet tones of the voice of the great Joe Donahue, I'm just in heaven. As a very aurally sensitive person, this is my favorite thing to hear you, as I do every morning. And Eric, it's great to hear you too. I mean,
nice to be here.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Well, it's good. It's good because you guys will be, you know, spending the weekend with each other working. I'm right in my introduction, right? That these are traditions. It seems to me I've been here almost 27 years, David. How long have you? You're almost 30, right? You're
30. I'm 30. Years, this 30 is 30, years. Buddy. This is
so,
it.
Uh-huh. But they've been going on almost that long, right?
Well, Magic of Christmas, not quite that long, but about half that long. I mean, it's certainly, you know, upwards
of... holiday spectaculars.
Oh, absolutely.
Always,
and
right?
We love doing it. And the reason we love doing it is because we invite young performers from all over the region. And usually it's a cast of thousands.
Right.
This year, just for safety, it's a cast of hundreds. We have our dear friends from the Capital District Youth Chorale, but we've only got the vaccinated ones, 12 and up, about 40 beautiful singers. I worked with them Monday night, and they sound great. We've got a group from Northeast Ballet, Darlene Myers, wonderful ensemble, dancing a little bit of the Nutcracker. We've got the amazing Boland Irish dancers, and we've got lots of other surprises and treats. It's a very beautiful show. We're going to do it actually without intermission, just so everybody can come in, enjoy the 90-minute show. It's probably going to be 100 minutes by the end of it, and head home. But it's going to be a really joyful, wonderful experience. Lots of great, great symphonic music, too. You know, actually, Eric is a close friend of a brilliant trumpeter, composer, arranger, Jim Stevenson, and he writes these very fun, funny holiday arrangements. And we're doing three or four of his arrangements. We're doing some Leroy Anderson. We're doing Sleigh Ride. We're doing a sing-along, masked, of course. But it's going to be great, great fun. And then the following week, as you said, we're going to have this epic, gorgeous symphonic concert Saturday night, 7:30 at the Palace.
So this is all wonderful stuff and things that not only I would think the orchestra looks forward to, but of course the community looks forward to as well.
Well, I hope so. And we just love it. And you know, actually, much to my delight, tickets have been selling very strongly, even with all the up and down news in the world. And we're all going to be safe and we're all going to be careful, but we're going to have a really wonderful time together.
What just what the, do you know what the protocols are? Is it are you masked and?
Yeah, it's the usual protocols that all the halls in the region are observing.
And it's on the website. Yeah. It explains it for people who want to know more about safety. But also, I think what you have done from the very beginning, I know you and I have talked about this at length, both on this radio show and not, but the importance and how cool it is that you also offer it to people who may not be ready to go out into the world yet, and it's also available online.
Right, that's next weekend. The magic of Christmas this Sunday at 3 is really only available live.
Only available live.
But the following weekend, that is, as we've been doing, as you say, all the way through the pandemic,
part of the,
you can buy a ticket, you can buy a subscription, which we'd love you to do, and when you buy a subscription, you get the digital option for all the shows, or you can just buy a digital view or a digital subscription itself. So lots of options for people who aren't ready to come back or have some reason, you know, that you have to be at home, that if you're not mobile, if you're, you know, you don't like going out in the evening, we have that option for you now, too. So we're very excited about the digital option. And we have this wonderful team, and they're going to have lots of gorgeous pictures of Eric and of Peter Kolke, our brilliant bassoon soloist, and these two pieces that Chris Rouse wrote shortly before his death, Eric's piece in 2012 and the bassoon concerto in 2017. Chris passed in the fall of 2019, so very recently, very sadly at the age of 70, one of our greatest composers, as you said. But these two pieces are the most virtuosic pieces in the repertoire. They're going to just be bassoonists and trumpeters are going to play these two pieces forever because they're so fabulous, and you're going to get to see up close, if you're doing the digital, both our great soloists.
So, Eric, give us a sense of what it is like to play Heimdall's trumpet and to be a part of this.
Let me say first, it's sheer hell.
It's actually, I'm thrilled, actually. Well, first of all, you know, I became aware of this, you know, shortly after the, you know, as it was being premiered in Chicago. It was written for Chris Martin, who was the principal trumpet in the Chicago Symphony at the time, and now is principal trumpet in the New York Philharmonic.
And used to sub with us, didn't he, Eric? You brought him to...
Yes, yeah. he subbed in his early days. Orchestra before I got here.
Before he was famous.
Eastman. Uh-huh. Yeah. But anyway, so I knew about this piece, and I was very excited because Chris's trombone concerto, which was written for Joe Alessi, the principal trombone of the New York Philharmonic, won a Pulitzer, and it was just this massive, incredible piece. So I was really looking forward to hearing it, and I did get to hear the radio broadcast, and I was very excited about it. And so when we had a chance to do this recording, I had to jump on it. In terms of preparing it, I can say that I've spent a lot of time on it because we were going to, play it and record it in April of 2020, which of course got derailed by COVID. So it's been in my mind and my heart for a couple years now, but it's a monumental work. It's huge. It's, you know, when you're dealing with Heimdall's a mythical figure, you know, from Norse mythology, brother of Thor, son of Odin, son of nine maidens. It's a fascinating person to think about. He was known as the most shining god with the whitest skin. He had incredible eyesight and incredible hearing. He could hear the grass grow and the growing of wool on sheep. But his job was to guard the Rainbow Bridge, which led into basically what we know from the Ring Cycle as Valhalla, and he was going to use his massive trumpet to basically signal Armageddon, and in Armageddon, you know, he was going to have this great battle with Loki. And I think what Chris describes, you know, I meant to go visit Chris and spend some time, you know, dealing with him directly on the piece, you know, over the winter break. But of course, he died in November just before then. But what I see, what he said in you know, some public statements, is that the title Heimdall's Trumpet basically refers to the last movement, and that seems to be the Armageddon. That's the end of the world kind of thing, and it ends with this just punishing high, loud, high D at the end of the piece, which is the sounding of the trumpet, which is kind of the end. But I think that the rest of the piece basically paints a picture of the life of this kind of mysterious person in mythology who we basically just have fragments of. And I think it's Chris's imagining of his life and his adventures, and it's really a fascinating piece. It starts with a little call that gets echoed by the trumpets and the woodwinds, and kind of this ethereal, otherworldly sound, and you kind of, it seems to me like the beginning of time is, you know, when he's being conceived, and then it gets into some chase music in the second movement.
A lot going on here, isn't there?
It seems like the third movement seems to have this kind of just this majesty and the responsibility of it being a god. So all of that.
It's just this
24-minute piece, and it's a lot of fun. It's got some beautiful music that we improvise between
gorgeous.
The orchestra and myself and all that. So.
Yeah, it's really gorgeous.
How do you rein all that in?
Well, he reined it in.
Into the confines of the Palace Theater.
Well, actually, the Palace Theater is a good place for it because it's a big space. I mean, we're going to be going over to Troy to record it in that space on Sunday after the show. But the Palace is great because it's a big sounding thing. And Chris Rouse was famous as really one of our most symphonic great composers. He loved big sounds. And as a young man, he was a hugely influenced by rock and roll, big Led Zeppelin fan. And he actually taught one of the first classes on rock and roll when he was teaching at Eastman. And so he was known for very big gestural pieces and extremely emotionally rich pieces. And these two late pieces are actually a little more subtle than the early pieces, a lot more subtle, especially the bassoon concerto, which is just light and charming and sounds kind of like Ravel and just beautiful. But it's great in this hall because in Troy, for an audience, it might be a little overpowering. So it's great that we're doing it in the Palace. Yeah. And it's just these are both, I was so happy to be able to put them, each one's going to be on either side of the program, starting with Don Juan, with one of the greatest of all tone poems, one of the great symphonic masterpieces of the 19th century, and a piece that Chris really loved deeply. So I put that on first, and then the trumpet concerto, intermission, bassoon concerto, and then something that may seem a little strange to people, we're going to do virtually the entire second act of the Nutcracker without dancers, just pure music. Because in my experience, usually when you hear the Nutcracker live, you're seeing it with a ballet company, usually a local ballet company, and if the orchestra's in the pit, it's usually a little chamber orchestra of 25 or 30 players, you know, doing a good job in an arrangement that tries to cover everything. But to hear it with the full 80-member orchestra, with all of its rich glory, the way Tchaikovsky imagined it, is really a special happening. And Russian conductors often will just program an act of the Nutcracker. So we've got Nutcracker at the end and Strauss at the beginning, and these two very different but equally beautiful concertos for bassoon and trumpet in between.
When you think about all that, because some of it obviously is holiday related, some of it isn't, but it all sort of works together, doesn't it?
It does, and it's really just a beautiful, beautiful combination of pieces and a great homage to one of our most beloved composers with whom we had a very close relationship. You know, we made a recording of his music.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that relationship. Well, when did you first start working together?
Oh, I think probably 25 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
And he came regularly, and he actually had a one-year residency with us 4 or 5 years ago, during which we made this beautiful recording of his piano concerto about the madness of Robert Schumann called Seeing, and a great Hindu vocal piece. And that recording got a lot of attention. And then we've played the trombone concerto that Eric referred to, and we've played the flute concerto and the violin concerto. And we're just big fans of his music. And every time we played his music, he would come up and spend time with us and help us learn the pieces. So this is a little different to play his music when he's not able to be with us because he's no longer around. But actually, his wife, Natasha, is planning to come. And he was very, very connected to us and really loved the orchestra and believed in the orchestra. And we loved him. I got this weird message the day he died on my phone. You know, it popped up and it said Chris Rouse. And I was like, that's weird. And it turned out it was Natasha calling me to let me know on his phone that he had passed. So I felt very close to him, and I think we all did. So we're very proud to be able to offer these two beautiful pieces. And this is, as Eric said, the end of a recording project that we've been working on for like 5 years. We did the oboe concerto, and these are the oboe and these two concertos are the three works of his that have previously never been recorded. So we're happy to make those available to the world as a result of this.
I just want to quickly remind people there are two concerts that are happening. One is The Magic of Christmas this Sunday, December 5th at 3 o'clock at the Palace Theater. Then The Nutcracker in this wonderful program that we've been talking about the last few moments on Saturday, December 11th at 7:30, also at the Palace Theater. And you can find out more information about all of it by going to albanysymphony.com. Albanysymphony.com. Eric, what is it like being principal trumpet?
Well, that's a great question, and I think about it a lot. And I think about that when I won the job in 1998, it kind of began the career. It kind of defines my own personal creative journey is very much aligned with that of the Albany Symphony. I have adopted the mission of New American Music as my own, and it's just a synergistic experience, and I couldn't be more grateful to be a part of this wonderful organization.
And we're grateful to you because you've showered us with a lot of glorious music over those 23 years, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It's an incredible thing.
And you're still such a young man, just like Joe. It's incredible.
That's right. We're all young.
Yes.
I thought I would just echo, you know, how much we love Chris Rouse's music and what a gentle soul he was, and you know the span of emotional impact that his music will give. I mean, there's something for everybody, but these pieces are going to be something that really leave an impression on people. It's from the emotional impact of something very loud and of Armageddon to some of the most delicate and sweet. Tender melodies. He stretched us and stretches the audience, and I think everybody will come away having felt emotionally touched by his music.
I mean, that's a wonderful thing, and certainly it's wonderful to have the connection that you did with him, and which makes it even more special.
Yeah, we've had this great chance to, you know, really have virtually all the greatest living American composers come regularly and spend time with us. And that's something that's just really enriching for us. You know, it makes us—it's so wonderful.
Well, it's kudos to you too.
Well, it may be, but it's what's so wonderful about it is it really causes us to think about composers who can't be with us—Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, Strauss.
Right.
You know, and understand them in a different way.
Because the undercard.
We've had so many opportunities to talk with great composers who are living that we're really more able to be in dialogue with the dead composers and think more like a composer and sort of understand their process, understand their ideas, understand their values in a very deep way.
Well, that's an interesting, I don't think we've ever explored that. I
don't know.
Find that to be fascinating. Is it safe to say that there is an aspect that you learn, because what you're saying is that you, because you're working with contemporary composers, you're in the mind of a composer, and then that helps you interpret the music of the great composers of the past.
Absolutely.
But I would also think the flip side to that would be that is it viewed with the same lens as we have grown, as we have changed, as we have matured? Is the music the music, or do we have different sensibilities that have to be brought into account, or can be brought to an account, depending
on? Yes and yes.
Okay.
You know, it's a great tradition. It's all interconnected. Mozart and Bach and Beethoven and Strauss and Brahms, and they're all connected to the present in lots of ways, and composers of the present, you know, refract back to them. But as you say, each of them, just like Mozart was very much of his time, Joan Tower is very much of her time, or Chris Rouse is very much of our time. So all those things are true. But the one fun story I like to always tell is the first time I ever worked with living composers was my first real job at the New York Youth Symphony. And every concert we did at Carnegie Hall, we would do a new work by a young American composer, an 8-minute piece. And we would spend 10 weeks working on the piece. And I would meet with the composer and she or he would help me and come to the rehearsals. And as I always say, I began to find that I was having deep conversations with Shostakovich and with, you know, Mahler and with dead composers, because I was so used to talking to living composers. And my wife, Andrea, of course, was then my girlfriend, was a little concerned about me. But it really does put you in conversation with creators in a very different way when you're dealing with creators all the time.
But you're looking at it through the lens of what you have just experienced through them, not plus the research that you have done on the composer as well, right?
They inform each other so profoundly. Yeah. Eric, I'm sure you have the same feeling, right? The dead ones inform the living ones, and the living one inform the dead ones. And I maintain that the reason
Hey, Mike, the dead ones inform the living ones. The living ones inform the dead ones.
Everyone informs everyone. It's like Bill Kennedy's book at the beginning of Ironweed with all the dead people talking.
Yeah.
I mean, the dead are talking through their pieces to us. There's no question about it. And I think our audience, to take it one step further, They have them in conversation because they hear Strauss next to Rouse, next to Tchaikovsky, and they're thinking of them in different and similar terms.
Now, I do want Eric to chime in on this, but also what I would like is it important? I would like your thoughts on this, David, before we go to Eric. Do you want the audience to go that far too?
Absolutely, that's the whole fun of it.
Yeah,
is that they're always in the restroom at the intermission arguing the relative merits of the new piece. Was it good? Was it bad? Was it emotional? Was it fabulous?
Well, there isn't soap, but go ahead.
Well, and I think they probably it causes them to think differently about the sort of accepted repertoire, the accepted classics, to really become more critically active in the way they listen, which is what we all want.
Well,
critical listeners.
And again, and just to shower you with another compliment, which I think you and the orchestra do so beautifully with your various talks that you do both before the performance and at other times throughout, to explain what's going on and to say, oh, this is what we're going to experience, and you do it from the stage as well.
And when the composer's alive, we always have him or her say a few words in the concert. And I should say, apropos of that, we are going to have a 6:30 p.m. This is on the 11th, a week from now, pre-concert talk on the stage. And we're also going to have a Friday 12 o'clock at the Bethlehem Library with Eric and I think Peter and talking about the music. So people are welcome to both of those.
Those are always very important. Yes, Eric, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that David is absolutely right that everything informs each other. And I think about what's so unique about the Albany Symphony and also our audience. I think that we are so lucky that we've got a community that is willing to embrace the freshness of what we bring. I think that everything in any performance, we have so many voices that are talking. So let's just take something like Beethoven 5, right? So Beethoven 5, everybody knows it. And so it's Beethoven's notes on the page, and it's the conductor's interpretation of those notes, and it's the 100 people on stage individually interpreting their notes and how that all communicates together with the energy of the audience. And I think that we come to it with a very different sensibility, knowing, you know, how intimately we are connected to the composers of our time. And so I think David has done a great job in dealing with the classics to not just recycle how, you know, Herbert von Karajan does it or somebody else, but we're always looking at it to go back to that original source of the score and try to imagine imagine that composer talking to us and what they were really trying to convey instead of just recycling someone else's idea.
Yeah, that's really deep. That's the crux of it, Eric. You're absolutely right. It's that because we're so respectful of our living composers and know how important what they write on the page is in terms of the tempo, in terms of the articulation, in terms of all those things, when we approach a Beethoven symphony, we do it the same way. We really believe in every indication the composer gives us. And strangely, a lot of interpretation is kind of wishy-washy in the world where the conductor wants to play it slow or wants to make it grand or whatever. So it really does make our awareness of the dead composers much more intimate than it otherwise would be.
I also think that it's wonderful that you, and I'm certainly not saying this to disparage any other orchestras and the beautiful work that they do, but you and you yourself and the orchestra as a whole have put a great spotlight on contemporary composers, which isn't always done because, hey, you also want to sell tickets. And it's easier to sell tickets to things that people know and people are familiar with.
What?
And sometimes people don't. Well, I mean, that's the rule of thumb. Am I not right? I mean, that's the rule of thumb.
Absolutely.
But you have cultivated, to your credit, over 30 years, you have cultivated a beautiful audience that trusts you and trusts that the work and the new composers that you're going to bring can become not only their new favorites, but also a prism to look at the past work as well.
Absolutely. And even more than trust, for example, last month we did a new piece by Viet Quang, and I can't tell you how many people stopped me in the co-op when I went to shop the other day and said, that Viet Quang piece was amazing. They didn't say that Brahms Piano Concerto was amazing, which it also was, or the Haydn Symphony. They were really excited about the Viet Quang.
Because it's new.
Yeah, well, and because it's fresh and because it's exciting and because no one else in the world is experiencing it the way we are. So it's really exciting to have that dialogue between the classics and fresh things.
Unfortunately, I have to wrap up, but it is a great pleasure to have both of you with us. David Alan Miller, Eric Berlin, you are going to there are two performances, The Magic of Christmas, Sunday, December 5th at 3 p.m. at the Palace Theater. The Nutcracker, Saturday, December 11th at 7:30, also at the Palace Theater. You can find out about all of the concerts and all of the work that will be performed by going to albanysymphony.com, albanysymphony.com. Eric and David, I wish you both a beautiful holiday season. I thank you so much for being with us, and just have a gorgeous two weekends of music.
You too, Joe. You have
be
some
well.
Time
you
off.
So
you work so hard. I'm worried about you.
Always great to hear you live and on the radio. Take
thank
care.
You very much. Be well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.